Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in-depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome into the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for checking out Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Behind the Arc. What a beatdown by Tennessee over Kansas at Thompson Bowling Arena. Tennessee coming off three games where the offense had really struggled, that it included losses to Florida, to Missouri, a really tight win over Mississippi State that left a lot of people wondering, man, what is this team going to do? Despite that, Tennessee was still favored over Kansas. The Jayhawks had not been playing well themselves. They had recently lost to Baylor, lost to Oklahoma, needed to scrap out a win against TCU on Thursday. They lost to Oklahoma State back on January 12th and then had to claw out a win against Oklahoma on January 9th. So Kansas had really been struggling. They also got pummeled by Texas at the beginning of this month. And so for a while, Kansas had not had things clicking. And it really looked like Kansas was kind of going to get back into form. After that loss to Gonzaga early, they beat Kentucky. That ends up not being as impressive as it was at the time. But then they followed that up with wins over Creighton, Texas Tech, and West Virginia before the end of December. And so Kansas entering January looked like, hey, that could be a team that maybe competes with Baylor a little bit, or that's going to be a top 10, top 15 team. Well, Kansas was still ranked in the top 15 going into this game against Tennessee. It's not going to stay in the top 15 after a performance like that. So Tennessee beats Kansas 80-61, doing it at both ends of the floor, 53% from the field, 61% from three-point range. Tennessee went 8 of 13 and 16 of 17 from the line. Tennessee absolutely dominated the glass. Kansas just 5 offensive rebounds. Tennessee with just 7, but 38 rebounds on the night. 23 for Kansas. And for the Vols, it really did everything well except limit the turnovers. Tennessee had 13 of them. Kansas only had 7. Tennessee, you know, didn't generate a lot of takeaways, but it defended so well. And even though you're not seeing the turnover numbers, you didn't see all the blocks. I think the only block of the game was Josiah Jordan James, which was actually a nice one because he kind of blocked it, grabbed it, and then managed to feed it to a teammate before falling out of bounds. You didn't see Eve Pons get that superstar highlight reel block that you've seen from time to time. But ultimately, I think it was Pons, maybe one of his best games of the season. He was 7 of 9 from the field in just 23 minutes, had 17 points and 5 rebounds, and was also 2 of 2 from beyond the arc. And he got banged up, kind of fell down to the hardwood with about 8 minutes left to go in the second half and did not return to the game. And he was standing up over on the sideline, so I think he was okay. I think from what it looked like, and again, this is being recorded shortly after the conclusion of Tennessee beating Kansas, so I haven't had a chance to get the official verdict from Rick Barnes, but it appeared that Pons was going to be okay because he was standing up over on the sideline and the trainers weren't really looking at him for too long, and he kind of walked off under his own power. So I think he was shaken up a little bit. I don't want to give too much speculation since I don't have the official word, but Pons did not play for the latter stages of the second half, but was having a really nice offensive performance. And now Eve Pons, you are seeing him play really well in his last several games. 17 points against Kansas, 13 against Mississippi State, where he shot 66% from the floor, 55% from the floor against Missouri in that loss, where he had 20 points and is continuing to just be really important for what Tennessee does offensively. John Fulkerson had 11 points. Jaden Springer had 13. Victor Bailey Jr. had 11 coming off the bench. Josiah Jordan James, 9 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, and that block that I mentioned earlier. So Josiah Jordan James doing it all again for Tennessee. Olivier Cumwell, I thought, had a really nice sequence. Only played 15 minutes and only had 4 points, but saw him make some good defensive plays, hit a couple of nice shots, was moving well around the floor. And I thought overall for Tennessee, this was a nice team effort, especially on a day where Santiago Viscovi hits an early three-pointer, hits a jumper early, and finishes with just 7 points on 3 of 4 shooting, but is willing to do everything else, had 6 rebounds in that game. And so the backcourt had a healthy rotation. Tennessee got off to a good start. Kansas kind of started to come back a little bit, cut it to, I believe it, Tennessee got out to a 9-2 lead. Kansas made it 9-8, something like that. And then Tennessee kind of took off and led by 20 or more for most of the second half. So for Tennessee, I thought it was easily the best basketball Tennessee's played all year. It's easily Tennessee's best win. And I think for the Vols to be able to do that, even though it was at home to a Kansas team that is not the Kansas team that it was last season, still a very talented team, and at a time where Tennessee needed to break out of a funk and was just a 2-point favorite at home against this Kansas team, you saw the defense do what it does best, and that's set up well in the half court and prevent teams from getting into a rhythm. And Tennessee, as I mentioned, didn't have a ton of steals. Kansas only had 7 turnovers. So why was the defense so effective? Was it just a bad shooting night for Kansas? It really wasn't. Kansas couldn't get quality shots early on. Tennessee was flying all around the court. It was forcing bad passes from Kansas. So Kansas can't just catch and shoot. So you don't have the ability to score off the perimeter because you're not getting quality looks. And you can't fumble around the ball. You can't make a bad pass and then get off a quality three-pointer against this Tennessee team. There's too much athleticism, really, from 1 through 5, especially with Eve Pons if he's playing the 4. And they isolated Marcus Garrett early and prevented him from really getting into a rhythm in the first half. And he finished with 15 points. But by the time he really got going offensively, it was a little too late. And so throughout the first half, I saw at the start of the game, Pons is manning up on Marcus Garrett. And that was something that I talked about on Saturday Sports Talk this morning with Eric Kane, was that could be a really fast and athletic matchup if Tennessee puts Pons on Garrett. And it isolated him. And Christian Brown wasn't able to get shots falling, was 0 for 4 from the field, all from beyond the arc. OJ Agbaji, just 3 of 12 from the field. And David McCormick, 8 of 12, he got his, but nobody else on Kansas's team was really able to do anything. Jalen Wilson came off the bench and generated most of his offense from the charity stripe. So I thought Wilson had a nice game, and he's having a good freshman campaign. He had 10 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. So to do all that in just 21 minutes, I thought Jalen Wilson was perhaps, besides McCormick, Kansas's best player in this game. But because Kansas isn't having good passes, because they're not able to set up their half-court offense, and it seemed like every time Kansas thought, okay, here's the pass where they get that shot off, somebody for Tennessee was there. The on-ball defense for Tennessee was spectacular, and a performance like that shoots Tennessee back up to the number one ranking in the KedPom defensive efficiency rankings. It was a fantastic performance from Tennessee. Kansas being frustrated all night long, shooting just 37% from the floor, 25% from 3, and 15 of 22 from the three-point line. And that's just not Kansas basketball. Kansas is a 36% three-point shooting team. And Tennessee frustrated the Jayhawks all night long, just 6 of 24. At one point, they were 3 of 19. It was a disaster for Kansas offensively. Tennessee was forcing offensive fouls. They were frustrating Kansas in its own end. And there were a couple of sequences where Kansas had the ball knocked out of bounds, had it come taken and go down the length of the floor with only, 22 seconds left on the shot clock or something of that nature. And so Tennessee continuing to make plays happen on defense, continue to pile on. They never took their foot off the gas. I thought it was a very complete performance from Tennessee's team. And the fact that you're getting quality minutes now out of Olivier Kumwa off the bench, I think you can make the argument that he is Tennessee's most improved player this season. You're seeing a bigger role and improvements with Santiago Vescovi and Josiah Jordan James, but you're used to seeing those guys in big roles from games that they played last year. I know Josiah was not at 100% last season, but from what I've seen with Olivier Kumwa, just how much more he is doing for Tennessee, especially since Fulkerson has not been at his peak offensively throughout the majority of the season. Having somebody else in the front court that can help you on the offensive end, I think is really important, especially now that Pons is starting to get going. If teams start keying on him defensively, Tennessee's going to have to find another way to get that inside scoring if its guards can't penetrate. And I thought for the most part, Kansas did a good job at slowing down the mid-range jumpers from the lane. Tennessee did a nice job at knocking them down from the baseline. And as time wore on and Tennessee was able to get inside more, those shots opened up a little bit. But that's where Kansas kind of shut things down early, was right in the middle of the paint. And then Tennessee started knocking a couple shots down from the perimeter, hit a couple of mid-range jumpers. You saw Pons hit a couple. Fulkerson hit a couple. You had Santiago Vescovi with some. And then when Fulkerson hit those back-to-back in the second half, that was followed up with – that sequence was shared with back-to-back missed open threes by Kansas. And then you had the big play at the other end by Victor Bailey Jr. with a three-pointer that made it a 24-point game, and you just felt like that's the nail in the coffin. And those missed open threes, so going back to Kansas's offensive struggles, when you are flying across the court defensively and you are forcing teams to take bad shots because you're wearing them late in the shot clock and you're getting contested looks and you're willing to foul a player to not allow them to hit quality shots and they're having to take bad three-point attempts, it puts that much more pressure on those teams when they're trailing in the second half and then they finally get open looks, because those looks are so rare that you just feel like you have to hit those. And so at a point in time where maybe it's not a pressure situation, it is for that team that's trailing. And I thought Tennessee did an excellent job at applying the pressure early, and then on those rare occasions where Kansas was able to have good ball movement in the half court offense and find an open man on the perimeter, Kansas just couldn't knock down threes. So I thought for Tennessee, it did everything it had to really in the first 10 minutes of the game when it took control. It kept the pressure on. Had a kind of an ugly sequence there towards the end where it had a chance to increase the lead from 16 to 18 or 19 and then committed a turnover. Kansas scored, and then Tennessee wasn't able to score before the end of the half. But again, we're talking about Tennessee only being up by 14 at the halftime break. And with the way they were playing defense, just looking like there was no way that Kansas was going to be able to come back in that game. And Kansas got off to a fast start offensively in the second half, but so did Tennessee. I think Kansas scored 11 points in the first 5.5 minutes after halftime. But Tennessee, it really just became a matter of trading buckets. And you can't trade buckets with a team when you're down by 20 in the second half. So Tennessee continuing to hit big shots. And when you've got all five starters hitting three or more field goals, and you've got three of your five starters shooting more than 50% from the floor, it just becomes that much tougher to defend and guard you. And the fact that Tennessee was so efficient from the free throw line, it's the best that Tennessee has shot from the charity stripe all season. So the Vols improve to 12-3 with an exclamation point to end the month of January. And now you go into a pretty big stretch here to start February. You go on the road to Ole Miss, then you have to go to Rupp Arena. That's never easy. I know that Kentucky is down this year, but then you get the rematch game against Florida, and then Tennessee has to play LSU. So those next four games are going to be very key for Tennessee over the first 2 weeks of the month of February. And I don't know what's realistically in the cards in terms of a SEC regular season championship, because even though Alabama lost to Oklahoma today, and we'll get more into that later in the podcast, it's still a three-game lead for the Tide over Florida, LSU, 3.5 games over Tennessee, because the Vanderbilt game from a couple weeks ago has been postponed. So Tennessee's still sitting in fourth at this point in time. So now you're really talking about, hey, maybe this shows that Tennessee can still hang on to a double bye in those first two rounds of the SEC tournament if the conference tournament gets played. We're still waiting to figure out what exactly is going on there. But all in all, excellent performance from Tennessee. The Vols are now 10-2 at home, and that was just the second win over Kansas for Tennessee in program history. It was only the sixth meeting between the two teams, so Tennessee now 2-4 against the Jayhawks. We all remember the first one, and we all remember Skylar McBee hitting that shot at the shot clock buzzer, and it was a fantastic win for Tennessee at Thompson Bowling Arena back then. Fewer fans in the stands because of the pandemic, but I think just as fun for Tennessee fans to celebrate that one now. Maybe not as big with Kansas not being a number one team and it still being a top 20 matchup between the two teams. A lot of fun for Tennessee today. Looked like the players were having fun. The fans that were there at Thompson Bowling Arena were having fun. I was having fun. I was at the game, so it was fun to see that as well. So Tennessee beats Kansas 80-61. The Vols will now turn their attention to Ole Miss coming up on Tuesday, February 2nd. That's a 7 o'clock tip-off, which means pregame coverage is going to start at 6:30 Eastern time on our radio station, 99.1, The Sports Animal, when the Vol Network takes over our stations. The SEC Big 12 Challenge. How did the other 8 games involving the SEC and the Big 12 shape out on Saturday? Discussing that next right here on the Behind the Arc podcast. If you're a Tennessee fan, it was a really fun college basketball day for you because The SEC Big 12 Challenge started out with Alabama and Oklahoma and then Texas A&M and Kansas State on at the same time. Those games went down to the wire. Texas A&M knocked off Kansas State 68-61. Quentin Jackson with some big plays for the Aggies down the stretch. And then Oklahoma, shorthanded, down two starters, including Austin Reeves, finds a way to beat Alabama 66-61. I understand Nate Oates with his philosophy on offense, where he doesn't want mid-range jumpers. He wants shots at the rim, or he wants three-pointers. And for the most part, it works. But on a day like today, Oklahoma was shutting everything down inside defensively. They were able to guard the perimeter fairly well, and Alabama was not willing to make adjustments. Eventually, it started hitting those outside shots, but then it missed some easy layups down the stretch, and just a tough loss for the Crimson Tide. Didn't get to the free throw line enough. And did a nice job defensively at getting itself back in that game after Oklahoma went on a 12-1 run to take a big lead in the second half. Alabama went on an 11-0 run to get within 1 point. They tied the game at 1 point. Oklahoma never gave up the lead and was able to put that one away. But Alabama just 39% from the field, 10 of 28 from three-point range. Oklahoma with a big day from Brady Manek coming off the bench with 12 points. He had... He was 5 of 13 from the field, but then you had Harkless going off for 14 points and then Harmon for 18. And I just thought for Oklahoma, it was a really impressive week for them because they've got 4 wins over top 10 teams and back-to-back wins after beating Texas earlier in the week. They beat a top 10 Alabama team on Saturday without Austin Reeves, and I thought that was a really impressive performance from Oklahoma, 38% from 3, 40% from the field, and made defensive stops down the stretch when it had to. Defensive rebounding, a serious problem for Alabama. It's been an issue. They gave up 13 offensive boards to Oklahoma in that game, got out rebounded pretty badly. I just thought for Alabama, it's got to do a better job on the glass if it wants to be able to compete with the best teams in college basketball, and Oklahoma showing that it's got the grit to compete with just about anybody. So you had some exciting games there. Follow that up with Texas Tech and LSU, Florida and West Virginia. Florida upsets West Virginia 85-80. I thought West Virginia was starting to figure out really its offense, especially after it struggled a little while after Oscar Tshiebwe left the team. But for Derek Culver had a monster performance, had 28 points in this game, but couldn't get anything out of its backcourt. Miles McBride, Justin McCabe combined for just 10 points, not getting enough out of everybody around Culver. And you had Sean McNeil coming off the bench to score in double figures. I thought he had a really nice game, scoring 21 points, hit 5 three-pointers, but couldn't do enough defensively. And how about Florida shooting 48% from the field and 47% from three-point range? Another monster day for Colin Castleton. And with Keontae Johnson being gone, you saw this in the LSU win a couple weeks ago. You saw this today in the West Virginia game. When Castleton goes off in the front court, everything opens up for Florida offensively. They're not afraid to get into these high-scoring games despite still not having Keontae Johnson. And now they've got Castleton and Scotty Lewis back. Those guys combined for 28 points, and Florida ends up having a monster day as three guys score in double figures, and Florida puts up 85 on a pretty good West Virginia team. So then you move later in the day, you've got TCU, Missouri. TCU had a monster lead over the Tigers, blew it late in the second half. The game goes to overtime. Missouri wins 102-98. So two pretty defensive teams combined for 200 points. Don't see that very often. Baylor beat Auburn 84-72. Baylor is just a buzzsaw right now, and Auburn's much better with Sharif Cooper. I'm curious to see what Auburn's record would be if Cooper's eligible for the entire season, but Cooper had 15 points, 6 of 17 from the field, and Auburn shoots just 41% from the field overall, 24% from beyond the arc, and a lot of complimentary basketball with Baylor. Jared Butler, another nice game with 16 points. Macy Oteague, 15 of his own, and Baylor continues to do what it does defensively. They are 16-0 on the season. Oklahoma State beat Arkansas 81-77. So at that point in time, and also Texas Tech beat LSU 76-71. I think Mac McClung is doing some really nice things. And the thing is that he hadn't made a field goal in the second half of this game, but he hit 2 3-pointers to help Texas Tech kind of rally late. And he has been a very clutch player for Texas Tech. He had 22 points in this game, and Texas Tech kind of trailed for most of that first half, struggled a little bit in the second half. McClung comes up with a couple of big shots on a day where Marcos Santos Silva isn't doing enough in the front court. He just had 6 points in this game. And Texas Tech gets the win. Mac McClung, you look back, he's had a couple of game-winning shots already this season. And when they lost to West Virginia earlier in the week, he was the guy with the ball in his hands. Even though they lost, even though he missed the game-winning jumper, he was the guy that they wanted with the ball in his hands. And that is how Chris Beard's teams at Texas Tech have operated, is having a big playmaker in the backcourt who is not afraid of those primetime moments. 2 years ago, it was Jarrett Culver. Last year, it was Jamias Ramsey. This year, it's Mac McClung, the Georgetown transfer. He has been so key for what Chris Beard's team has done this season. And I think he's done an excellent job, averaging over 17 points per game. He has really shined at Texas Tech. Again, he had 22 in this one. Texas Tech improves to 12-5 on the season. So after all that, we're sitting at 4-3 going into the 6 o'clock tip-offs. You already know what happened with Tennessee and Kansas. Tennessee beat Kansas 80-61. Mississippi State annihilated Iowa State. And Iowa State's not good. But to see Mississippi State win by 39 points over another power conference team is beyond impressive. And so Iverson Molinar had 20 points for the Bulldogs, 95-56, the final score, and a fantastic game for Mississippi State. So the SEC wins the SEC Big 12 Challenge 5-4. Texas and Kentucky did not happen. That would have been a fantastic game and probably would have resulted in the SEC Big 12 Challenge being a tie, but 5-4, the SEC wins as the game at Rupp Arena does not happen. That game was canceled. And so the SEC, thanks to a couple of upsets too, Florida beating West Virginia, I thought was huge. And then Texas A&M surviving Kansas State, though Texas A&M was favored in that game. And that's despite LSU blowing a late lead. That's Alabama failing to close the door against Oklahoma, losing for the first time in a long time. And then Tennessee gets a big win over Kansas. And walking out of Thompson Bowling Arena tonight, a lot of Tennessee fans were really, really happy. And there were a good number of Kansas fans in attendance, especially in the area where I was sitting. I was kind of up in the nosebleed section. So I saw a lot of Kansas fans that made the trip, but Tennessee fans were elated with the way that that game turned out, were incredibly pleased, were really happy with Eve Pons, especially felt like Tennessee was doing a better job at not turning the ball over as much. And now there's suddenly all this optimism around the basketball program after a tough couple of weeks. You start a new month, you get closer to March. If you keep playing this way, maybe you reinsert yourself back into that top 10 conversation. Maybe you start talking about, instead, oh, well, we got to settle for a 4, 5, or 6 seed. Maybe you get back under that 3 line in a little bit, especially with Alabama taking a loss to Oklahoma. So still work that needs to be done. Tennessee has to be more consistent. We have seen Tennessee shoot well this season before. It needs to continue to do so against high quality teams, because that Kentucky game is really just, it's a nuance now for a lot of SEC teams, because Kentucky's still tough to play. It's still a quality team, but because its resume is so bad, if you take a loss to that team, it hurts your resume a lot, where normally losing to Kentucky is not a huge deal. But now it's a red flag on your resume. And so it's not fair. That's just kind of the logic that goes with it, because, okay, yeah, we know Kentucky's talented, but when we look at their resume, they're not playing like a good basketball team. So if you lose to them, that shouldn't reflect well on your resume. So Alabama has swept Kentucky. Tennessee needs to find a way to do the same thing. It's going to have an opportunity to do that next month when it meets the Wildcats twice in the first 3 weeks of the month. So the SEC wins the SEC Big 12 Challenge 5-4. Tennessee, a part of capping off the late rally after the SEC trailed 4-3 through the first 7 games. And then Mississippi State takes care of business against the Cyclones of Iowa State. And now Tennessee moves on and will get back into SEC play next week. A Tennessee commitment was in a really big game earlier on Saturday as well. Talking about Kennedy Chandler, the number one point guard in the country who is committed to Tennessee for the class of 2021. He was on the big stage on ESPN with his school, Sunrise Christian Academy. I'll tell you about that. I had a chance to watch the game. I'll tell you about that and more coming up next on the Behind the Arc podcast. Kennedy Chandler and his high school team played in the Montverde Invitational down in Florida this past weekend. They had 3 games over the last several days, and three games in 3 days, actually, all against top 20 teams in the country. Sunrise went in as the second-ranked team in the nation, and I thought for it was a good opportunity to A, see Kennedy Chandler on ESPN. Their game on Saturday was on ESPN3, going up against Compass Prep out of Arizona, which was a top 10 team. And for Kennedy Chandler, I like what I see out of him. Again, he's the Tennessee commit for the class of 2021, who's the five-star point guard. He is considered the top point guard in the entire country for the class of 2021. Kind of a look at his stat line over the last three days. On Thursday, they played the 19th ranked team in the country from Indiana. Kennedy Chandler in 25 minutes, 6 of 8 from the field, 4 of 5 from 3, 20 points, 6 steals, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block. And his team went on to win by 24. So against the top 20 team in the nation, Kennedy Chandler balls out. Then on Friday, they go up against the 6th ranked team in the country out of Utah. Kennedy Chandler, again, 25 minutes, 8 of 11 from the field, 4 of 4 from 3, 20 points, 9 assists, 4 steals, 4 rebounds, and his team wins by 11. Arizona Compass Prep, little bit different. This team had a ton of length watching this game, and they were flying defensively all over the field. Kennedy Chandler, just 4 of 9 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, held to 10 points, but 7 assists, 5 rebounds, and a steal and a block, and really did a nice job at helping his team get back into the game and really didn't start getting in offensively where he was really able to shoot until the second half. So did most of his damage there, but set up his teammates well, and at times his teammates weren't finishing, and they end up losing this game by 3. But at the end of the game, they get a defensive stop. Chandler is going down the other way, trying to run the half-court offense. He pick and pops with a guy to his left, and his teammate drops the ball before he can get a three-point shot off. So kind of an unfortunate ending to the game for Kennedy Chandler and the Buffaloes out of Sunrise Christian Academy in Kansas. But for Chandler, I thought overall it was a really nice performance. I mean, you're talking about 50 points in 3 games where he went just astounding shooting percentage. I mean, 4 of 5 on day 1, 4 of 4 on day 2, and then you're talking about going 2 of 4 as his worst performance on day 3. So just a really nice showing for Kennedy Chandler. I mean, that's 3 missed three-pointers the entire weekend in 3 games. And I think for Tennessee, you're just seeing a guy that's not afraid to score but can also distribute really well and play good defense, created takeaways, and needs to be a little bit more careful with the basketball. But I thought this Compass Prep team out of Arizona with so much length, they swallowed up Kennedy Chandler and tried to make the rest of that Sunrise Christian team beat them, and they couldn't do it. So I thought it was a nice job by Chandler doing everything that he could to keep his team in that game, because Compass Prep took control of the game in the first half and looked like they were going to run away with it in the second, and Chandler was a big reason why the Buffaloes were able to battle back in that game. So a really impressive performance, I thought, when you look at everything that, playing 3 games in 3 days against 3 top 20 teams in all of high school basketball in the country, and that makes for a pretty good weekend overall. So Kennedy Chandler with 3 double-digit scoring days, 2 20-point games, piling up the assists, piling up the steals, piling up the rebounds, depending on the day. And overall, I thought I was very impressed finally getting to watch him play a high school game on television. I was very, very impressed with what he was able to do. And you're talking about a guy going 10 of 13 from three-point range over the stretch of 3 games in 3 days against 3 top 20 nationally ranked teams. So great for Kennedy Chandler. I thought it was a good performance. Obviously, they would have loved to have won the tournament, but just the way it goes sometimes. Again, Montverde Academy down in Florida is the reigning high school national champion. So these are some of the best teams in high school basketball in the country. And Kennedy Chandler, held his own and then some. And I think Tennessee is getting a really good point guard coming out of Sunrise Christian. Again, Memphis native, Tennessee beat out Memphis for him, as well as a couple of other blue bloods. And it was really cool to see him playing on a big stage and playing well, especially in that third game when a team was scheming entirely against him. And that's what it took to beat that Sunrise team, especially when they almost came back at the end. I appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, we'll have an episode this upcoming week after Tennessee faces Ole Miss to get you ready for the midweek SEC action. But Tennessee beating Kansas 80-61 at Thompson Bowling Arena is the headline, and a lot of fun. Watching that game at Thompson Bowling Arena was fun to be a part of it over there with the Tennessee faithful, and certainly fun doing this podcast talking about a big Tennessee win and the SEC winning the SEC Big 12 Challenge, and fun having you along for the ride as well. So thank you so much for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, Tennessee and Ole Miss, 7 o'clock Tuesday night. Pregame coverage starts at 6:30 right here on The Sports Animal. Thank you again for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on The Sports Animal.